Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced on Mississaugas of the New Credit Territory in Toronto by Ome Selma Rahimtula. And we're your hosts. I'm Carly Forbes.
And I'm JL Chung from CILU in Thunder Bay. Winnipeg's Kurdish community rallies on World Kobani Day.
The Kurds, they fought on behalf of all humanity. Let's do something.
A vigil is held in Montreal to pay respects to Indigenous women.
Yes, tonight we demonstrate that Indigenous women are not worth less.
But first, here are the headlines.
On October 28th, the Ontario government announced draft legislation that would ban the practice of carding. The issue of police carding has been on the forefront of community struggles for years in Ontario, especially in Toronto. The practice of carding allows police to randomly stop and question citizens and gather information on them that can be used in future investigations. The practice of carding discriminately targets young black men and other people of color, Aboriginal men, and people with mental health issues. This discrimination has been clearly documented and studied and even admitted to by Toronto Police and the Ontario Premier. After much public pressure, Ontario Minister of Community Safety Yasser Naqvi announced that the government will soon be unveiling new regulations in an effort to curb arbitrary and random stops by police. However, activists and community members around Toronto are not convinced. Black Lives Matter Toronto released a statement shortly after NACVI's announcement, saying it was not a victory because the proposed regulations won't actually stop police from profiling, stopping, or intimidating black Torontonians. They simply provide a framework that disguises the existing illegal and racist practices for which police can fall back on as a justification for their actions. Black Lives Matter is calling these new regulations a how-to guide for police to continue their anti-black practices. Sam Tackle has been addressing and struggling against police carding in his community of Jane and Finch, Driftwood, for many years.
My reaction to Minister Nakby's statements regarding banning carding in the province, I think it's a good start. I also am wondering about what accountability measures are going to be put in. Into the legislation, and of course, these things take time. So one thing I think is interesting to keep in mind, for the context of which I know best, is Toronto Police. And Chief Saunders did say that this is a practice, random carding, stopping, that the service has stopped for a long time, hasn't been doing it for a couple of years. So I think that type of response to this legislation makes me, it makes me hesitant to see, hesitant to see how well it'll be received. So we have to make sure that there are, and push for, I think, very clear accountability guidelines.
Black Lives Matter and black and people of color activists and community members have always concluded that any attempt to address the problem of racist policing that does not consider the core issue of systemic racism itself will always come up short.
Last week, Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship John McCallum announced that the federal government would fully restore funding to the Refugee Health Program. In a press release by Health for All, Ritika Goel, a Toronto family doctor and member of Health for All, was quoted as saying, "We are extremely pleased that the Liberal government plans to fully restore the Refugee Healthcare Program. We urge the federal government to take further positive steps to ensure health care is provided to all people living in Canada. Migrant workers are a vulnerable population who do not have access to health care in Canada." Across Canada, migrant worker groups from coast to coast are launching a coalition to call on the federal government to end the discriminatory practice of tying migrant workers to specific employers and provide pathways towards permanent immigration status. The Coalition for Migrant Workers' Rights is calling on Prime Minister Trudeau to keep his campaign promises and to move towards a single-tier immigration system based on permanency and family reunification. In a press release by the Immigrant Workers Center, they quoted GT, a seasonal agricultural worker, stating, "We are the only workers who are tied to employers and can't change jobs. We come here without immigration status, and that puts us at a disadvantage. That's not fair to us. It's not fair to Canadian workers, and it's not fair to employers. The Immigrant Workers Center also quoted labor and human rights lawyer Faye Faraday as saying, "Over the past decade, deep changes were made to Canada's immigration system that bring migrant workers into the country with temporary status under conditions that predictably leave them vulnerable to exploitation by employers and recruiters. Tied work permits, mandatory removal after 4 years, and lack of pathways to permanent status drive real precariousness for migrant workers. There is an opportunity now for a fresh start to rebuild the system on principles of security, decent work, and permanence." Newly appointed Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship, John McCallum, has yet to announce any federal plans for how they will approach the Temporary Foreign Workers Program.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Just because a town is small doesn't mean we have to be. So we can fall, I guess it all depends on me. I will stand against the odds, tell me what you wanna see. It's a long road, but we'll get.
Up from the hole we're standing in, it's time to get out and find strength in my native pride. I will represent my land and make it right. Live in a small place with big dreams, I will take any chance that you give me. So let me think deep, don't want to be forgotten, want to be a light while the devil plotting. I want to see the truth, I'm just being honest. I want to be the best, but I gotta keep it modest. I want to see my culture succeed, I want to feed that love inside me. Work endlessly to find the energy and give everything to be free.
It's a long road, but we'll get.
You just heard Echo My Soul by Nui Jinan by a group of students from Lac Seul First Nations.
On Thursday, October 29th, hundreds attended a vigil at Place des Arts in Montreal, paying respects to recent allegations of abuse against Indigenous women in Val-d'Or by Sûreté du Québec police officers. Organized by the Quebec branch of Idle No More, Representatives from Amnesty International, the Quebec Native Women's Center, and others demanded equal justice for Indigenous women and leadership from the federal and provincial governments. CKUT volunteer Celia Rabinovich brings us sounds from the event.
Yes, tonight we demonstrate that Indigenous women are not worth less.
We're all here for one very specific reason. We want a public, national, and now widened inquiry about the violence against Aboriginal women. We're here seeking truth, demanding for credible and public processes that will make the truth come to light, and hopefully justice will follow. We are outraged and demand justice for these women. We need healthy communities to ensure that the next generation will not be facing what the actual generation is. The abuse has to stop, and the victims need support now. Niue.
Le Canada ne peut pas défendre sur la planète les droits des femmes.
Canada cannot defend women's rights on a global scale if it continues to ignore the systemic discrimination which it perpetuates. The circles of violence are numerous and complex. We want change right away for the long term, now. We need your support today, for the weeks to come, for the months to come. First arrived, last served, we cannot take it anymore. We must have them in line with us, at the head of society, with all the public voice they need. We're counting on you, and we will always stand with Indigenous women.
Partie prenante de la société avec toute la voix publique qu'elles ont besoin. On compte sur vous et on sera toujours aussi avec les femmes autochtones.
On est un mouvement.
We are a group of Indigenous citizens. I don't know more Quebec. I don't know more Canada. We have worked very hard since 2012 at multiple levels on the mobilization on land, on social media. Presently, I am pregnant, and tonight, this vigil is for my daughter. It's so that she doesn't finish on a poster. It's so that all the girls that we will have, and the boys as well, will not finish on posters. We will not finish as statistics. It's depressing the fact that I'm born an Indigenous woman. I have a 15% higher chance of finishing on a poster, and that no one will care. We need your support. We need you to raise your voice because we are all alone. It's depressing, like I said, that when I was a teenager, I found this all normal.
Des fois, on se sent déprimé. J'ai dit, quand j'étais une adolescente, je trouvais ça normal.
When we were always seen as less than nothing in society, I found this normal. But I don't find this normal anymore because I had the help of everyone who has spoken tonight to appreciate myself and say no. You are someone who deserves a place in the sun, and that's what has allowed me to speak up, and today I want to ask, speaking as a citizen, speaking as an individual, please, Mr. Prime Minister, give us our commission for national inquiry. Give us a commission that is transparent, that is independent, that will show us that you hear us, and that you understand that we're talking further about our relationship.
Que vous nous entendez et que vous comprenez qu'on part de loin dans notre relation.
And maybe after that, after this commission, we can make change, real changes, changes that will be there for my daughter. This evening, I have hope that our voices will be further
heard.
Thank you to Celia Rabinovich from CKUT Montreal for that report.
Sunday, November 1st was World Kobani Day, a day in which centers around the world, in Europe, Canada, the US, Australia, the Middle East, and Asia, held rallies commemorating the people's resistance in the Kurdish-Syrian city against the siege from the Islamic State 1 year ago. In Winnipeg, about 40 people, mostly from the Kurdish community in Manitoba, held their rally in front of Winnipeg City Hall around 4 o'clock local time. CKUW contributor Michael Welsh was on hand at the gathering and brought back the following report.
On the afternoon of Sunday, November 1st, members of Winnipeg's Kurdish community and their supporters took part in a rally outside of Winnipeg City Hall. About 40 showed up altogether. This rally was one of several taking place around the world, commemorating the largely successful efforts of Kurdish freedom fighters in the Rojava region of northern Syria in repelling Islamic State militants from the Kurdish-Syrian city of Kobani. Winnipeg organizers were calling on the Canadian government to recognize the efforts of the People's Protection Unit in defeating a clear and present threat not only to Kurds, but to people around the world.
My name is Farhad Sultanpour. I'm the president of Kurdish Association of Manitoba. This is a very serious threat for the whole world, not only against the Kurds. I mean, if the ISIS was not stopped by the Kurds, they would have occupied entire Iraq a year ago. So ISIS threat is real serious, is really big, but for some mysterious reason, it's still the Western world, they don't take it as seriously as they should. If you look at that at the whole picture, the Kurds are the only incredible force, absolutely friendly with Western values and ideas, and they're fighting. The rest is basically, well, we have al-Nusra, you know, other Islamic groups that they're fighting ISIS terrorists today, but they're terrorists also.
Organizers claim that as much as 80% of Kobani was destroyed in the wake of the Islamic State insurgency between September 2014 and March of 2015. They would like to see the Trudeau government assist in the reconstruction of Kobani, in addition to making good on their promise to bring in 25,000 Syrian refugees by year's end.
The Kurds, they fought on behalf of all humanity. Let's do something. Let's rebuild the city. Nothing is happening. So it's very, very unfortunate. Canadian government promised to bring 25,000 refugees. We're hoping that Canadian government should give a special quota to Kurds to reward the Kurds for fighting ISIS on behalf of everybody.
One speaker spoke out about being inspired by the women involved in the conflict, claiming they presented a model in the struggle for women's rights.
We really care about women's rights and women's liberation in the West, in the Middle East. Here, we should support these women.
My name is Kobra Rahimi. I'm a member of the Kurdish community. We want to celebrate and we want to honor the women of the YPJ who have been fighting ISIS for years now and have liberated Kobani. Here are these women and young girls who are going to the front lines and facing them and fighting them. It's just amazing.
How young?
Some of them look very young, like 17, 18, even 16. I don't know their exact age, but they look very young, like girls who should be at school studying. We tend to just focus on the airstrikes, but I think the real fight is happening on the ground, and these women have a huge role that they have played and continue to play, because it's not always just fighting with weapons. It's also these women just being there and speaking out is actually like a fight in itself and a weapon in itself, like telling ISIS, like, we are women and we are capable of fighting you and we will, and they did in Kobani.
One of the participants in the rally questioned the former Harper government's approach of military airstrikes against the Islamic State and recommended a different approach for Canada in addressing the extremist militant threat.
My name is Shorsh Kurt Palani. I am Kurdish by heritage and Canadian by citizenship. Thinking of the history of Middle East and the history of imperialism and colonialism, it is very unlikely for someone like me to openly advocate for the deployment of militaries. One of the most important things in my mind for Canada today to be able to help the crisis in Syria and Iraq is to help not in offering more bombs, but to offer political legitimacy, for example, to PYD, the Democratic Union Party of Rojava, that is controlling the YPG, the armed wing of PYD. PYD and YPG require political legitimacy so we can see them as a player, so we can work with YPG and PYD, so they can work with Arabs and Assyrians and Armenians in the area that are all fighting against ISIS.
From downtown Winnipeg, on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe peoples and the homeland of the Métis, this has been CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
In that report you heard from Farhad Sultanpour, president of the Kurdish Association of Manitoba, and from Kubra Rahimi and Shorsh Palani, Kurdish refugees from Iranian Kurdistan. Thank you to Michael Welsh from CKUW Winnipeg for that report.
As of midnight on November 10th, the city of Montreal is set to dump 8 billion liters of raw sewage into the St. Lawrence River. As of 10 p.m. on November 10th, 30 protectors blockaded the Mercier Bridge and have said they will continue until further notice. CKUT's Sheila Ferrando interviewed Agazarage Deer about the ongoing resistance by Okwahomwe people and their supporters to the City of Montreal's plan to dump 8 billion liters of raw sewage into the St. Lawrence River.
Since the sewage dump plan was announced by Mayor Denis Coderre in late September, a group of Mohawks calling themselves the Protectors of the St. Lawrence River have carried out a number of actions in opposition, including rallies outside Montreal City Hall, press conferences, a temporary rail blockade, and a campout with a sacred fire in Kahanawake. We're joined now by Agazarage Deer. Could you tell us a bit more about why you're opposed to the sewage dump?
First, it's a war on creation in a sense that everybody relies on water. As humans, we are made up of water. So by dumping 8 billion liters of this untreated waste, which is not only just household waste, it's industrial and medical waste. There's floating objects, there's medications, hormones, syringes, blood, et cetera, et cetera. So whatever is in the water, whoever is drinking the water, whatever is drinking the water, animals, fish, people, plant life, it's toxic, it's poisonous, and it will lead future issues to people, health issues and environmental issues and whatnot.
What actions have the Mohawk people taken?
Oh, well, we started out with, we lit a fire at the junction and we read a release saying that we are opposed, we are opposed. I signed the letter myself that was delivered to Denis Coderre. And we are opposing it. We temporarily blocked the tracks for that morning. The rally at City Hall also. We had an action with the Ganawage Marina where we went out onto the river, and we had an action also at the same time in LaSalle where we on the boats we had our banner that said save our river, and it was more or less to show we do use the water for recreational activities and everything too. And at the same time, they were our group. We called them Group A and Group B. Group B was in LaSalle, and they were stopping people passing by. Were asking what was going on. And the next, we had a march down the train tracks, starting from Saint Constant into all the way into the Adirondack Junction, where we blocked rail traffic for at least about approximately 2 hours. And there was train traffic that was stopped on each end from Montreal and on the Candiac side. Well, we've had a few different things. And right now we're working on a fundraiser to raise as much money as we can. So it would be posted on the Protectors of the St. Lawrence Facebook page as soon as it's done. And we have our fire has been lit since October 17th. The guys have been out there. Raising awareness, handing out flyers, people are stopping, pulling over and asking what's going on because not everybody is aware that this is happening. It's a whole group of us. We're a collective. We're about in between 10 to 20 people coming in and out, sharing ideas, sharing thoughts and deciding on actions and what to do as a group together.
Mm-hmm. That's great. If the dump were to go through, how would it affect your community?
The first dumping site, there's 28 of them all the way down, starting the first pipe that comes out is in LaSalle. Like right across from Ganawage, almost right across. So the river is going it's going downstream from Ganawage, so it wouldn't directly hit us. But as Kanyagahaga people and as Nungwehungwe, which is, you know, a human being, we have a responsibility to protect our mother, our Mother Earth, our waters, our all life and all creation. So it wouldn't only affect us, it would affect everybody downstream too.
Mm-hmm. And so has the mayor of Montreal responded at all to the Mohawks of Ganawage?
Not at all. No, we have not received any kind of response.
Wow. And then so do you feel that his attitude falls into a wider pattern of Canadian colonialism when dealing with Indigenous resistance?
Definitely, for sure. There are so many so many groups, so many organizations, environmentalist organizations, indigenous and non-indigenous also, that are just completely ignored. It's monetary concerns overpower environmental concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is just tossed to the side. It's not just a Native issue. It's you know, it's everybody's issue too, because we all live on the same planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time for a community radio report. NCRA Executive Director Barry Rook brings us this interview from Farm Radio International and the ways that community radio is supporting youth in sub-Saharan Africa around issues of mental health.
My name is Heather Gilberts. I'm the program manager at Farm Radio International for a program, a mental health program that is using radio programs as well as school-based mental health training for teachers and students, and training primary healthcare workers to raise awareness about adolescent depression and suicide prevention in Malawi and Tanzania. Farm Radio International is a Canadian-based NGO, and we work with radio broadcasters across sub-Saharan Africa to build their capacity to produce good programs for rural families, farmers, and others in sub-Saharan Africa. So the current program, the mental health program, is creating radio programs for young people by young people. So each station produces their own weekly youth program, and so they use their own formats and their own style, and we provide guidance on how to integrate issues of mental health into their program. So the topics are a wide range of topics important to young people. So they talk about stress, relationships with parents, relationships with romantic relationships, relationships with teachers, teenage pregnancy, HIV, AIDS, drug and alcohol abuse are all common topics on both shows in both countries. In both countries, the radio program has become one of the most popular radio programs in each country. So we have an enormous listenership. Because the radio program has been so popular, we're trying to develop plans so that they can sustain the program themselves. The program is about mental health because the project is about mental health, but it's become a youth platform in each country.
Thank you to Barry Rook and Matt Willish for that report.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced by the Groundwire National Coordination Team. Music this week was by Nui Jinan.
Headlines this week were written by Ome Salma Rahim Tula and Carly Forbes.
We also thank Matt Willish, Celia Rabinovich, Catherine Fisher, Gennardio Sullivan, and Michael Welsh.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station, on Rabble, or download at groundwire.ncra.ca. Groundwire is a project of the members of the National Campus and Community Radio Association.